welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. This is our bi-week episode, and I am your host, Kelsey Conway, and we've got a special episode for you Bengals Beat podcast listeners. We're going to start this episode off with an interview with Bengals head coach Zach Taylor. He's going to give us a few minutes of his time to talk about what he likes about what his team's doing in the first half of the season and what he's expecting from the Bengals when they get back from the bye, because it's going to be, as Joe Mixon said, a race to the finish line. The Bengals have put themselves right in the thick of the playoff race. So we're going to talk to Zach Taylor about all of that. And I'm also going to get to your fan submitted questions last night on Twitter. You guys all sent in a bunch of questions. So I'm going to try and answer as many as I can to give you guys some answers that you're looking for on this bye week. So here's my conversation with Zach Taylor. And here he is. It's Bengals head coach Zach Taylor joining us on the Bengals Beat podcast. Happy bye week to you, coach. You guys are coming off of a game that I know you wish went another way against the Browns yesterday. What's been your initial takeaways now that you've had a day to kind of go through the film and digest everything that took place yesterday in front of that big crowd at Paul Brown Stadium?
Yeah, you lose the turnover battle 3-0, and it makes it pretty clear cut. And so, again, there's not a lot of mysteries when you watch that tape of why the game went the way it went. Can't let a good football team get a lead like that, and they're not going to give you many openings to jump back in it. So we got to put that one behind us. We got to learn from some of the mistakes that we made and move forward. But we still got half the season in front of us with some tremendous opportunities, and our guys will come out of the bye week focused the right way.
When you saw the schedule when it came out in April, what was your first reaction when you saw where this bye week was going to be placed? Because I know a lot of coaches are probably pretty envious of where this bye fell for you guys right in the middle of the season before the second half push.
I agree. It's a good point. You know, it's typically, I think, best to have it at the midway point. If you're having a great year where you're undefeated or one or two losses, you usually like it a little bit closer to Thanksgiving, because then you just got that last couple games before the playoffs. But I think we got at the right spot. And you just think about, our players have given a lot to us physically since late July, all the way through August, all the way through September and October. Now we're all the way in November, and they need a break, you know, and physically they've given us all they got. And so it's a good chance to get them off their feet for 4 or 5 days and get a chance to recover and get their minds right and come back focused for these last 8 weeks of the season going into the playoffs.
For a coaching staff in the NFL, I know you told us during your media availability today, you are going to have some time at the end of the week to spend with your family and unplug. But what does a bye week look like for a coaching staff? I know that, you know, you typically spend your Mondays going over what happened on Sunday, but how do you do your self-assessment of the first half of the season?
We spend the first couple of days of the week just examining your own position, your own side of the ball. What are the strengths and weaknesses? Are we putting guys in the best spots? What are some things that maybe we thought were going to be good for us in training camp that we've done a lot of over the first half of the season that maybe haven't been as good, or we need to improve? And what are some things that maybe we haven't done as much that we should do a little bit more? And so we're not looking to make wholesale changes. We think we've got really good units that are understanding of what we're asking of them. And then it's just, how do we adapt throw some new ideas into the mix for these last 8 games of the season to keep us ahead of the tendencies, to keep some of the other teams off balance.
Well, I know I'm probably catching you a day or two early, and you'd probably be able to give us some more in-depth answers once you go through it. But I just wanted to spend some time on each part of the game right now. So offensively, what do you like most about what you guys are doing on offense, and what do you want to see improved most in on the offense specifically?
Our number one objective on offense is to be explosive and score points. And I feel like we have done a really good job of that for the most part. Hasn't been perfect, but we're certainly out there with explosives and yards per play and points per drive and points per game. And that puts you in a good position to be able to win them all. Every game that you go into, we just got to do a better job with the turnovers. And really, our Achilles heel has been just that first drive of the drive. You know, once we get past those first three plays and get that first down, we usually get into really good rhythm and are able to score some points. But overall, there's a lot to be pleased with, and there's a couple of things we certainly got to clean up.
I was going through the numbers, number 9 in total offense, number 9 in points per game, rushing number 21, third down number 21, passing offense number 6, and sacks number 25. Of those, which one are you most proud of, and which of those categories does you want to see go up in the second half of the season?
Well, we'd like to be top 5 in points per game and explosive plays. You know, those are really where we want to be. And the sacks, we have to do a great job protecting the quarterback. There will be times that's the price of doing business. If you want to have an explosive offense that pushes the ball down the field and gets the ball to playmakers, it's going to require the quarterback holding the ball for a little bit longer or extending plays. And that's where some of the sacks come, or on the perimeter once he's extended those plays. I think you see a lot of great quarterbacks in this league and explosive offenses in this league. Oftentimes end up with a couple of sacks, you know, because those guys understand that we got to get the speed down the field and get those guys one-on-one opportunities to where they can finish off some big plays. And so sometimes they go a little bit hand in hand. We always want to do a great job protecting the quarterback, and the quarterback's got to do a great job protecting himself also, finding that right balance. But again, we want to be about explosiveness and scoring points.
And I wanted to ask you this question before we switch to the defense, but from a coach's standpoint, because you guys are able to see things and get information that nobody else can, is there a player on offense that maybe isn't being talked about or isn't noticed as much that's having a very good, maybe underrated season for you that you'd want to tell us about?
I think that's, I'll pick one for you, Stanley Morgan. You know, Stanley doesn't play a lot of snaps, but man, he is the energizer bunny when he's out there. And really brings a tremendous amount of energy to this team, not only on offense, but on special teams. And if you just isolate your eyes and Stanley Morgan, when he's in the game, something good's happening towards his area, whether it's running around full speed and taking the top off the defense, and he'll get his opportunities in the pass game at some point, or putting a linebacker on his butt, you know, on a perimeter toss play. And Stanley's just, he's first team all energy, man. And the team really feeds off of that. And, you know, I think, people in the world talk a lot about a lot of our playmakers, and they get the necessary attention. So I don't think anybody really slips under the radar that way. But Stanley is the guy that really represents doing things the right way at all times. And, you know, more opportunities will continue to come his way.
Okay. Well, switching to the defensive side of the ball, similar type of questions I had for you. Number 22 against the pass, top 10 in rush defense, number 5 in sacks, and number 12 in points per game right now. What do you like most about what you guys are doing on defense, and what are you hoping to see improved in the second half of the season?
Yeah, those numbers probably fell off a little bit these last 2 weeks. And, you know, I felt like the offense can contribute to some of the points per game with some of the points we've given the other team in that Chicago game and in this most recent game. But the defense has played stout for us. You know, we got to continue to take the ball off the opponent, create more turnovers. I think that's an area where you always stress. We can always do a better job of. And we always make sure that we limit the explosive plays. We got hit with 2 big ones yesterday that really hurt us. But I thought our defense did a great job making adjustments on a lot of things that hurt us the first time around. And we just got to eliminate that first time around. Yeah, that's the biggest thing. But we got the right leadership and the right guys on that defense, and we'll be good going forward.
What are you seeing as the biggest trend over the last 2 weeks in terms of the run defense? Because up until these last 2 weeks, and I know they've been different types of games for you, but What are you seeing is the biggest trend there that you want to see corrected coming out of the bye?
Well, when you give up the explosive 70-yard or whatever it was, it's certainly going to hurt the stats there. And so I thought these guys really did a good job against Cleveland. Responding once the first time they saw the scheme and they saw the quickness and the power of some of those gap scheme runs that maybe got us for 8 to 10 yards the first time around, our guys were able to make the adjustment and win with speed over the top, win at the point of attack, rally to the ball in the alley. And I just thought our guys did a really nice job making the adjustments, playing physical, playing with speed, and stopping some of those runs the second, third time around.
And is there, I asked you about a player on offense, but is there a player on defense that's kind of making this thing go for you guys as a unit?
Well, I think I could single out everybody. Everybody certainly had their moments. I think 2 guys that maybe don't get the deserved attention would be DJ Reader and Larry Ogunjobi. Mm-hmm. Whether they do or they don't, I don't know. But having those guys in the interior has really been productive for us, and it allows all the people around them to continue to make plays, the ends, the backers, the safeties, all those guys. So those guys have done it the way we want it done and have been good for us.
It seems like with DJ being healthy this year, I know that he missed a lot of time last year, but he's really showing why you guys gave him that big contract extension and wanted him in Cincinnati. And he's the type of player that the numbers don't always show, but every time you look, he's making plays in the run game, right?
I think that's the best way to put it. You know, sometimes with those D tackles, the numbers aren't going to represent the value that they bring to the defense. But when a good D tackle is doing his job, everybody else's numbers are going to go way up. And so it's a little bit of an unheralded position there. You know, if you're not a guy that's getting 10 sacks as a defensive tackle, which is extremely rare, but those guys serve a great purpose and they put other people in a position to make good plays.
And in the secondary in particular, you know, cornerbacks always get a lot of attention. Cheeto's been great lockdown corner for you at your number one spot. But at the number two spot, you've been dealing with some injuries with Trey Waynes. I know you guys were hopeful for him to be healthy this season, and that hasn't quite worked out. But you've made some in-season acquisitions at that spot. Could you tell us a little bit more about Vernon Hargraves and Trey Flowers and if they're going to be expected to have a bigger role in the second half of the season?
Yeah, I think you get a chance to ease those guys into packages that fit them. And so as you're around them a little bit more, you get a chance to see what their strengths are and try to utilize them to their strengths. We've gotten Trey on the field in that role. We'll see where Vernon stands in this offense, but it's really good to get veteran experience as the season gets deeper, because that's usually a position you end up in November and December having to play several guys at different spurts of time. So the more experience we can get, the better. And we expect those guys to fit right into the system and get up to speed quickly and be able to help us win.
With Jesse Bates, I know he led the team in interceptions last year. Do you feel like they're coming for Jesse soon this season?
Yeah, they come in bunches sometimes, you know, and so he had the tip ball pick against the Jets. He's going to be in a position to make a lot of plays. And I think he flew onto people's radars last year. They tested him down the field and they realized we can't do that anymore. And so that's part of what goes into their game plan, is you got to be really careful sending the ball deep down the sidelines, because Jesse's got the range to go make those plays. And so that probably has hurt him a little bit in terms of the interception numbers. But I'm confident that he's going to be able to create some turnovers for us down these last eight games.
That's a good perspective to hear, because I think people sometimes focus too much on the numbers. And I know as coaches, you guys have a really good balance at that. But, you know, like you said, he kind of flew under the radar and surprised some people with his numbers. Then you just haven't quite seen. But everyone that covers the team and is inside the locker room knows just how important Jesse Bates is to your defense overall, right?
I agree with that. You know, he's a captain on this team. The team values him. The team really appreciates the work he does. He does a great job with his communication, getting other guys aligned, and making the plays that come his way. And that's what we're counting on with Jesse.
Well, I just wanted to ask you a couple more things about moving forward with this team. I was looking at the records of the opponents you guys face, and I know as coaches, it's just a week-by-week process that you guys go through. But when you look at it, I think of the eight opponents that you have, seven currently right now have a winning record. And you said something to me before the season that I wanted to bring back up about just kind of how much you relish in the opportunity for the team to prove itself, that you don't run away from situations that might seem scary. You guys kind of welcome those. You put yourself in a situation now where you said today you guys are able to control your own destiny. As a coach and a competitor, does that kind of fire you up that these games are going to be against teams that you're basically going to be neck and neck fighting with for that postseason spot, you know, hoping that you guys are able to take care of business and get there?
Exactly. We want to earn our place in this league. We don't want it handed to us. We don't want to dumb into it with other teams losing games. So we get a chance to really go in our next eight games. You know, six of these teams are at the top of the AFC with five or more wins. And we wouldn't want it any other way than to be able to go play these teams and prove ourselves. And as long as you do that, then you got a place at the table when the playoffs come around. So I like where we're at. I like that we're going to have a great opponent with the Las Vegas Raiders coming off the bye. great chance to reprove ourselves and regain some momentum in the win column. And our guys are going to be ready. They're going to be focused coming out of this bye, and I'm excited about the team we'll have going forward.
Yeah, that seemed to be the common theme coming out of all the interviews yesterday, is that although, yes, you lost two in a row, but there doesn't seem to be like any source of panic amongst the players on the team. A lot of CJ Uzomah said that he had a conversation with Jamar Chase, and it basically was just about them each taking responsibility, where Jamar Chase was saying, you know, I could have done this, and this better. And CJ said, well, you didn't even know what I didn't do right because you're so focused on yourself and what you didn't do. And CJ was saying that's a really good sign of the maturity of the locker room that you have.
I agree with that. You know, it's every team in this league has faced adversity already at this point in the season, you know, and so that's, it's not just something that happens with us. We're facing our own 2-game losing streak. We'll overcome it. We'll get some wins, and everybody will be back feeling good, and we'll have our confidence there, and we'll make a good run here. But it's important to have the right attitude. Like you said, guys take accountability for what they can control, and they're not pointing fingers. And that's certainly a step in the right direction for us.
And a lot of it, too, comes down to health. And I'm knocking on some wood here, but you've got to feel good about the health of your team so far. I know that you still have a lot to go, and no team ever goes into a game fully healthy. But you got to feel good about the fact that you've been pretty healthy to this point, and hoping that continues moving forward, right?
Yeah, we're getting good work done during the practice weeks, and our guys are doing a real good job managing their bodies. And that's a credit to the players. That's a credit to Joey Bose and his strength staff of making sure they do the right amount of work to keep them conditioned and in good shape. And so we'll keep plugging along with the same plan going forward.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to have you on at the end of the season, and I can ask you this question then. But if you could kind of boil it down to one or two things, and I know that before the season you said going into week one that the game was going to come down to the turnover battle. And I thought when you were able to boil it down to what these games are going to come down to, it really helps in terms of being able to measure how the games went. In order for you guys to have the season that you want to have, what do you think this season, the second half of the season, is going to come down to, your ability to do what and what?
It's as simple as that. We feel like we have a good football team. We're going to be playing some good football teams. We've got to come out positive in the turnover battle at the end of the season. We're not there right now, you know, and I don't know that anybody in this division is, except for maybe Cleveland after that last game. But that'll serve a big role going forward on how well we take care of the football and how many takeaways we can take away in special teams and defense.
All right, well, Zach, before I let you go, I'd like to ask you one non-football question about your bye week. Is there anything that you're looking forward to doing on your bye week? Is there what does a bye weekend look like for Zach Taylor?
Yeah, it'll be nice. I've got 4 kids and a loving wife that have sacrificed a lot, you know, especially over the last, not only the last 10 years, but the last couple of months. And so you get a chance to take my wife on a nice date night. It would be good. She's picked up golf, so maybe we'll play 6 holes together, or maybe play some tennis together. And then for my kids, my boys are playing basketball. So just to go out and be a dad and shoot hoops in the driveway is something I've kind of missed that opportunity so far, and get a chance to take advantage of. And my daughters get to go watch them at ballet class. You know, that's what they're doing right now. So that'll be fun for me to get a chance to go watch them do that.
That sounds like a jam-packed, fun weekend. Well, we'll let you go get your work done so you can get closer to being able to do that with your family. Well, Zach, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you, Kelsey. Appreciate it.
Well, just because it's the bye week, that doesn't mean that we are not going to give you your favorite segment of the Bengals Beat podcast. And here he is. It's Jason Hoffman here to talk about some overs and unders and the week 10 spread in the NFL. And Jason, I guess I'll just start with wow about last week, right?
Yeah. Everybody was wrong about everything, not just us. The betting equivalent of the, what is it, 76 Dolphins can now pop the champagne because the Dallas Cowboys lost. They were perfect against the spread, so they won't go undefeated this season. It was a nightmare on the betting boards. The Jaguars got their second win of the season over the predominant favorite in the AFC, the Bills.
Yep.
Last night, the Rams got absolutely shellacked by the Titans.
Yeah.
And the Bengals went from number one seed in the entire conference 2 weeks ago to now being dead last in the AFC North out of the playoffs. So everything's wonderful. It was a bloodbath. The casino's probably cleaned up pretty well because of how many favorites lost.
I feel like we need to just enter the meme where it's like, everything's fine, it's fine, it's fine. All right. Well, so let's just move on from last week. So let's talk about this week.
We are doing full-blown football guy, football gal. We are burying the game ball from last week. It's gone. It's over. We're starting now.
We're on to Cincinnati. All right.
That's right.
What you got for us in week 10?
All right. So a couple of interesting lines. And again, these are all early because the Tuesday injury reports are not out yet. The Monday night game still hasn't been played. But man, big line considering who they lost to last week, the Jaguars beating Buffalo. The Bills are currently 12.5-point favorites going into New Jersey against the Jets. I like that for a bounce back game for them. I will take the 12.5. I'll lay it, I should say.
Okay.
And that'll be our first bet of the week. We'll say that that was a blip on the radar, not the actual picture. Okay. Another line I like is Arizona hosting Carolina. Arizona's going to lay 9.5. I don't know what that Carolina offense is. I have no idea.
I think Darnold's still seeing ghosts.
Yeah, and even Matt Rhule in his Monday presser today did not explicitly say that Sam Darnold was their starting quarterback going forward. So there's a lot up in the air right now. And it seems as if the multitude of interceptions and giveaways that he had throughout his career was actually something that happens, not something that was just a once or twice mistake here and there. So, yeah, a lot of upheaval there in Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cardinals should be healthier coming back next week. So I like that.
I have a question for you. When I was looking at the spread, why is it that the Baltimore Ravens, who I think might be the team to beat in the AFC right now, are only -7 favored against the Dolphins, who you think is the worst team in the NFL? But the Bills are -13 on the road. I think, right, you said that, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then,
and a half, but yeah.
And then the other one, the Colts, -10.5 at Indy. Why are the Ravens lower than those teams? Because in my opinion, the Ravens, that I would put them as a double-digit favorite, right?
You would think so.
But they're not against the Dolphins.
You have to remember two things. So first, the odds are somewhat reflective, but not an actual picture of who would really be favored by what.
Yeah.
The odds and lines are set to get people to bet on both sides of it.
Okay.
So to that point, right now, there's probably a decent amount of money coming in on Miami because 7.5, depending on which book you look at, 7.5 on Tipico, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Is pretty appealing, right?
Yeah.
However, the other side of this, scheme matters. And you got to remember that Robert Flores used to be the DC in New England, who was notorious for shutting down Baltimore.
Right.
So I think there's a little bit of that going into it.
That just caught my eye because I didn't quite understand why the Bills, coming off of their performance, would be such higher favorites against the Jets team. Like that one wasn't really quite making a lot of sense to me.
Well, and the Bills, I think everyone's looking at the Jets getting blown out by the Indianapolis Colts.
Yeah.
And then everyone's kind of ignoring that terrible Bills performance yesterday. But yeah, the line difference there doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Other than, like I said, to try to get as much money as possible on the underdogs right now.
All right.
Or the favorites, depending on how you like it.
What's the game right now on Monday afternoon, by the way? Jason and I are talking early on this bye week. What's the game you're taking to the bank that you're thinking, this one looks good to me across the board?
All right. So you know I like Tampa Bay. but I do not like Tampa Bay going into Washington, where they barely eked out a playoff win last year, and having to lay 9.5 points.
Okay.
I like Washington plus 9.5, not as the home dog of the week to win outright, but minus or plus the 9.5. The home dog I have winning next week outright is going to be the Las Vegas Raiders, who are a complete dumpster fire off the field, but not that bad on the field. They are getting 2.5 points. If you bet them to win outright right now, it's a plus 112. So $100 nets you 112. And that would be my home dog of the week. They're hosting the Chiefs, by the way, on Monday Night Football, or Sunday night next week.
That, wow. I mean, like, who do the – I mean, I know that they have Darren Waller and Hunter Renfrow, but I'm a little shocked that you're so high on the Raiders, considering – I know you are very, very down on the Chiefs, but – the Raiders, there's been a lot of drama recently, and they're losing players left and right. They don't have their star corner. Henry Ruggs gone. I don't know. I'm just shocked, but interesting.
Well, I watched, you know, this is maybe a little bit of recency bias, but I watched the Kansas City game last night against – or yesterday, I should say, yesterday evening – against the Green Bay Packers with Jordan Love, who looks like he's good enough to maybe play at a D3 college right now.
Okay.
And that was a close game. The Chiefs couldn't blow him out. The Chiefs have a terrible defense. Derek Carr can throw the ball 65 times in that game for about 520 yards, and I wouldn't be surprised. And, yeah, I think it just turns into a back-and-forth shootout. And I like I said, I like the Raiders to win outright. I also like the over in that game, which is currently set at 50.5, I believe.
All right. Any other games that are catching your eyes that are maybe don't let this tempt you? Just any other thoughts on this week's games?
So no other thoughts on this week's games, just because – this is so early in the week, but I do want to update people on our preseason future prop bets. So Joe Mixon to win the rushing title. Still crazy odds on that if you want to buy that. But more importantly, you can still get Ja'Marr Chase after this week's performance and last week's performance. You can still get Ja'Marr Chase at a pretty good number, depending on where you look. Looking like about 250 to 300 to 1, depending on which book. At Tipico right now, it's 275. So $100 would net you at 275. So yeah, I like that future bet as well. Bengals updated win total is at 8, which was the number I thought it should be at going into the season. I like the over on that. I still like 9 wins on the year, 9 or 10. So I would still go out and get that. And then lastly, if you want to bet the Bengals to make the playoffs, you can get almost 6 to 1 on your money right now after this past week's performance at 550 to 575, depending on which books you look at. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there. The Bengals aren't playing, obviously, so they aren't going to lose. yeah, there's still some off week stuff, bye week stuff, if people want to get out there and bet the Bengals.
All right. Well, I know that, as always, you have something that you'd like to say to all of our listeners.
That's right. Disclaimer for our listeners. None of this is meant to be taken seriously or is actual professional betting advice. Everything here is for fun. And Tipico provides the lines for us. They are a member of Gannett, which is our parent company. And Gannett makes money off of that deal. So I have to advise all of you of that. And if you or anyone you know has a gambling problem, please go to 1-800-GAMBLER.
Gotcha. Well, Jason, thanks so much for your insight. We will be back, hopefully, looking a lot better than we have the last couple of weeks following this bye, right?
We're going to turn it around. We're on to Cincinnati. Oh, wait a minute. That's where we're at.
Well, I thought because it's the bye week and it's right the middle of the season, this would be a good time for a mailbag. And several of you listeners and Bengals fans submitted a lot of questions, and I'm going to try and get to as many as I can. But as you know, sometimes there's just a lot and there's some that I just can't answer. But I'm going to give you my best shot here. So I'm going to start this off with these questions were all submitted last night following the Browns game. So, one of the biggest questions I've seen, common theme question here, and this one was from at T Fuifui. Sorry if I butchered that name, but this was submitted to me last night. What happened to getting the other targets involved, i.e. Boyd and Uzama? So this question has been asked a lot. After the performance yesterday, we've asked Zach Taylor about this twice now. So here's the deal with Tyler Boyd specifically. Zach Taylor told us that on two plays that were designed to go to Tyler Boyd yesterday, they resulted in sacks. So the plan was not to keep Tyler Boyd out of the game. Zach Taylor said, I certainly never thought I would be walking off the field yesterday with Tyler Boyd seeing as few targets as he did. But at the end of the day, there's only one ball to go around, and Jamar Chase is the guy. Should Tyler Boyd see more consistent targets? Yes, because every time he touches the ball, usually something good happens. He very, very rarely makes a mistake. But in order for Joe Burrow to be able to not just target, you know, his wide receivers, but everybody looks at the Bengals and they say they have so many good skill players. Yes, they do. But in order for Joe to take advantage of his receivers, he's got to have better pass protection across the board. And yesterday, it just wasn't good enough. So it doesn't matter who you have at wide receiver. If you cannot block good enough, and this was on the running backs included yesterday, Zach Taylor said two of the sacks were on running backs. It doesn't matter. And then when the Bengals started to get down, you start getting into, okay, I need an explosive play. Well, who's your explosive play guy the last 2 weeks? It's been T. Higgins and Jamar Chase. So just like for Tyler Boyd, yes, he needs to see more targets and get involved early, but his types of games are more of the possession style close game. So if Tyler Boyd isn't seeing targets in a closer game, I'd be more concerned. But when it turns into a 41 to, you know, 10 or their Bengals are down three touchdowns, he's going to look for T. Higgins and Jamar Chase as his first and second reads. It's just the way it's going to go, because if you've seen all season long, those have been the two guys that have created the most explosive plays for this offense. Same thing with C.J. Uzama. He's probably not going to be the first read ever in this offense. But when Joe has time to get to his third and fourth read, that's when you'd expect to see C.J. Uzama more involved in this offense. So I think to answer your question, yes, Tyler Boyd needs more targets, and they've got to figure out a way to get him involved early so that him and Joe can start building that chemistry early on in the game. But in order for us to see Joe Burrow be able to utilize his star wide receivers that he has, the Bengals have got to play they can't keep playing from behind, and B, they need to protect better. So keep an eye on that. If it continues to happen for the next couple of games, then it'll become a bigger question. But for right now, that's what I think is going on with Tyler Boyd and his limited targets recently. Lars McIntyre, that was submitted today. Why was Carmen benched yesterday? He's played very well at guard. Well, the Bengals coaching staff clearly doesn't think he's played very well at guard, because they did make a decision to start Hakeem Adeniji yesterday. And the reason that's notable is because they decided to start a player who had not even played in a game this season. And that goes to tell you what they think of the way Jackson Carmen is playing. Because if you're going to put your chips in on a player that you haven't even seen play this season, only at practice, that tells you they're really not happy with what they've seen from Jackson. I know that for them, it's going to be kind of a – there's some growing pains with Jackson Carmen. But at the end of the day, he was drafted in the second round. And when you're a second-round draft pick, you're expected to be a starter. And clearly, they don't think he's playing well enough to be in the starting lineup. And the Bengals needed to be better on the interior, especially on the right side. And they thought Hakeem Adeniji would be better than Jackson Carmen yesterday. And Zach Taylor said today he's going to be the starter moving forward. So it doesn't look like we'll be seeing Jackson Carmen unless an injury happens. So stay tuned on that. But that is the deal with Jackson Carmen. From moving on to a question submitted from David Skeggs last night, what happened to the defense? Well, that's probably the biggest question I have about the Bengals team right now is what is going on with the defense in the last two games? Because even more than how well the offense played for that couple game stretch, Cincinnati's defense was the biggest reason why that team was 5-2. They every week, it didn't seem like they had a game where a team just totally ran down their throats and made them look like a unit that couldn't stay on the field with anyone. And over the last 2 weeks, the physicality, the swagger of the Bengals defense just hasn't been there. And you got to stay away from making general statements off of a two-game sample size. But I will say this. The missed tackles are a problem for this defense right now. And it's something that Zach Taylor said, we had been a very good tackling team. And he's right. They had been a very good tackling team. But Jesse Bates, Logan Wilson, Akeem Davis Gaither, Jermaine Pratt, and even yesterday, Larry Ogunjobi on that 70-yard touchdown run from Nick Chubb. It went Larry Ogunjobi. Then it was a missed tackle from, I think it was Akeem Davis Gaither. Don't quote me on that. But my point was it was a three-level. There were missed tackles on all three levels of the Bengals defense. So I think when you talk about what happened with the defense, the missed tackles are an issue right now. And also, when the team isn't able to push, be the imposing defensive line that they had been in the first five games, when they're not able to impose their will on an offensive line and a quarterback in the way we saw, when Trey Hendrickson and Sam Hubbard were making those plays, the rest of the defense fed off of that. And we just haven't seen those guys up front impose their will and be able to make a difference in the way that they had. And there's reasons for it. Quarterbacks have been getting the ball out fast. Teams have been running the ball more at the Bengals. But at the end of the day, as Sam Hubbard said, they've got to make adjustments to the way teams are adjusting to the Bengals. And I think right now the Bengals are trying to figure out who they're going to be because the league appears to have caught up to what the Bengals were trying to do at the beginning of the season. All right, well, moving on to a couple more questions. A lot of questions about the defense today. Who are they really from Jason Pike? Well, Jason, we'll find out who these Bengals are because as you heard earlier in this podcast with Zach Taylor, seven of their final eight games are against teams with winning records. The Bengals have the opportunity right now to create their own destiny. They play teams that they're going to have to beat to make into the postseason because, you know, they play the rest of the AFC West, and they still get around at the AFC North, and they're going to have to win, in my opinion, they're going to have to win at least six of their next eight games to make it into the playoffs. So to answer your question, we'll find out who these Bengals are. We'll find out the identity of this team. I know that right now they're a very explosive offense when Joe Burrow has time to make plays. I can tell you that much. And on defense, I really like what Trey Hendrickson's doing and the way those guys are playing up front. I think the missed tackles is very uncharacteristic, so I wouldn't expect that to be a trend. But I will say they've got to start creating more turnovers on defense. So we will see who this Bengals team really is over the next eight games. Let's see. Moving on. Defense has regressed as a unit. What will turn it back around? From Dr. Who Day. Well, as I just mentioned, very uncharacteristic performance from Lou Anarumo's defense over the last 2 weeks. But I will say the Bengals defensive line is the heart and soul of that Bengals team. Look for guys like Larry Ogunjobi, Trey Hendrickson, Sam Hubbard, DJ Reader, those guys up front to figure this thing out, because they're too good of players to not be able to affect the games. And the rest of the Bengals defense goes as they go. So keep your eyes all on the Bengals defensive line, because they are what make the Bengals defense go in the way that they had been playing to start the season. So I wouldn't look so much of it as a regression. Yes, they haven't played as well, but I still think they are a very good defense at all three levels. But they'll have to prove it, and they'll get the opportunity to do that. So continuing to move on to our questions. Will they make and change a defensive coordinator? Will Zach Taylor finally allow his offensive coordinator to call the plays? Okay. First of all, the Bengals have lost two games over the last 2 weeks, and I understand on Twitter it's easy to throw the pitchforks, but just a month ago, everyone was praising the job that Lou Anarumo was doing for this defense, because I'm going to read you these numbers. The Bengals defense ranks number 9 in run defense, number 5 in sacks, and number 12 in points per game. They rank number 22 against the pass. But from an overall standpoint, those numbers are pretty good. So let's just relax with the trying to take people's jobs away after two losses. The Bengals defense was really playing well under Lou Anarumo. And let's not forget, he was the guy that created that great game plan to beat the Ravens, in which everybody said, I couldn't believe the pressure packages Anarumo came up with. So before we, you know, bring the pitchforks out for everyone, let's just remember this defense had been playing very, very well under Lou Anarumo, and they really like playing for him, and I expect them to respond for Lou Anarumo. And as far as the other part of your question about Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan, Zach Taylor has done a great job with this offense. This offense is explosive, and they are good. And I don't understand why there could be, and I know it's easy to play a Monday morning quarterback from your couch, but Zach Taylor has this offense humming. He's got a great relationship with Joe Burrow. There should be no reason anybody's asking for someone other than Zach Taylor to be calling plays for this offense, because look at the job he's done with this Bengals offense. They rank number 9 in total offense, number 9 in points per game, number 6 in passing offense. Those are some pretty great numbers, and I expect them to get even better as the season goes on. So let's just put the pitchforks away and just let the season play out. All right, I'm going to get to a couple more. I mean, I already addressed the Tyler Boyd question. Okay, can Eli Apple only play 4 minutes a game? From Genuine Long. Yeah, Eli Apple has not been great the last 2 weeks. But I will say, he has exceeded my expectations as a backup cornerback. He was not brought on the Bengals to be their starting cornerback outside of Cheeto. Trey Waynes has not been able to get back on the field, and that's been an issue for the Bengals. For the most part, Eli Apple has held up well enough. He's had a bad couple of games, and yes, do I think maybe someone else, you know, could slide in there, but you're not just going to get a starting caliber cornerback on the street in week 10 because he'd be playing with someone else. So Eli Apple knows the system. He knows Lou Anarumo really well. Let's just lower our expectations for him and understand that he was not signed by the Bengals to be their starter, and he's actually played well enough. Yes, yesterday he had a rough outing, but at the end of the day, you can say that for a lot of players on the Bengals defense. So that's my thoughts on the Eli Apple thing. You guys already want to talk about the draft. I'm not going to talk about the draft. from Ryan Kaufman, why doesn't the front office see its weaknesses and address them like real contenders do? Did you not see the 3 free agents the Bengals signed on defense and what they've done for this team? I think it's just really important as fans to not just have these knee-jerk reactions. Trey Hendrickson, Cheeto, Larry Ogunjobi, they've all been really good players for this Bengals defense, and those were all free agent acquisitions that the front office brought in. The front office changed their approach and made a concerted effort to get better in free agency. So yes, the front office is doing a lot, actually, and don't get caught up in mid-season changes. I mean, I know everybody looks at the Rams and say, Well, they're all in. Well, yeah, but, you know, if they don't win the Super Bowl, the Rams might find themselves in a pickle for the next couple of years. So they don't have many draft picks. So you can't have your cake and eat it too. I think the Bengals front office did a really good job this offseason of bringing in, Riley Reiff too. Those are four players that I think have made a difference for this Bengals roster. So, as far as in season acquisitions, I mean, you bring up Xavien Howard. Well, he was probably going to cost, the Ravens didn't even bring him in because he was going to cost a first round draft pick. Do you really want to give up a first round draft pick for a corner that you're not sure is going to be a difference maker? I don't know. I just think you got to look at both sides when you talk about why aren't they bringing more players in. And also, I think the Bengals do a really good job of putting themselves in position to be able to keep their players. And they've got to get a deal done, hopefully, with Jesse Bates in the offseason. So they've got to keep these things in mind for the future. So I'm going to wrap it up here with one more question. And I think I'll go with this question submitted from Tony Catalano. Why were we so gullible to think anything changed? All right, let's just all relax. The Bengals lost two games the last 2 weeks. They haven't looked great. But let's not forget about the team we saw for the first 7 games. The Bengals, I think, are still a playoff contender. I think they are going to get this small tweaks figured out on defense, and I don't think it's going to be an issue moving forward. I still think the Bengals can win 10 games, and I think they're going to put their best foot forward. So you're not gullible in thinking that this team, Zach Taylor has changed the culture. Just look at the way the guys responded yesterday. I talked to at least 4 players who all said the same thing. We're not panicked. We're going to get this right. So let's all just relax, use the bye week to kind of pump the brakes. And then the Bengals come back with a big, big, big game against the Raiders in Las Vegas after the bye. And I think we'll be able to, by middle of December, really know who this team is. So don't feel bad or thinking that you're gullible. Zach Taylor really has changed this locker room, and we'll see exactly what this culture is made out of, because they've got everything in front of them. So, well, guys, I really appreciate you submitting your questions. That was a fun mailbag. I'll continue to try and do this on social media. Send me your questions at Kelsey L. Conway. I'll try and get to them as much as I can. I hope that you guys enjoyed me answering your questions. I'm sorry if I didn't get to some of them, but I will try my hardest the rest of the season to be able to do this with you guys, maybe bi-weekly or something. All right, well, that's it for me. I hope you all have a great bye weekend, doing whatever you want to do when the Bengals are not playing. I know that I'm hopefully looking forward to watching some football and recharging my battery for what I'm hoping is an exciting rest of November and December.